Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for checking it out. Before we get to my guests, listen, I'm going to just tell you what happened, okay? And then I'm going to tell you what I think we need to do in life. So I'm on the subway and the door closes. I sit down and there's a woman across from me and she goes, "You're an asshole," like loud, like everybody could hear. I'm like, "What?" She goes, "You're an asshole." I go, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "You're an asshole." I go, "Why?" She goes, "'Cause there was a woman standing over there and you should have given her your seat." Now, I was like a middle-aged woman. She didn't want the seat. And if she did, I would have given it to her. I mean, I tend to have a rule, actually, which is if you're pregnant, you got a busted arm, you've got a ton of bags, you're really old, I'll give you my seat. If you're my age or below, go fuck yourself, whether you're a man or a woman, okay? So I said, "Well, why should I give you the seat?" She goes, "Well, because that's a woman and a man should give a woman a seat." This is like a 25-year-old woman telling me this. And I'm like, "Oh, a man's supposed to give a woman a seat." I go, "Well, I need a scorecard." She goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "Because, well, I'm not sure what day I'm supposed to treat women as equal and what day I'm supposed to hold the door for you and give you my seat. So why don't you tell me what day I'm on?" And she goes, "Well, I think you're an asshole." I go, "Well, why don't you give her your seat if you care so much about her?" She goes, "Oh, I don't want to." I'm like, "You're a shitty debater." And secondly, I said, "You're being a hypocrite because you could give her your seat." She goes, "No, I'm not going to give her my seat." I go, "Well, you're a hypocrite." She goes, "Well, you're an asshole. You're a hypocrite. You're an asshole. You're a hypocrite." And everybody on the subway is looking at us like, "This is awesome. Oh my God, this is like entertainment on our way home." This went on for like 15 minutes between stops. And then finally we get to our stop and the woman who was at the center of this is walking out and she turns to both of us and goes, "I can't stand this anymore. You're both assholes." Now, my point in all of this is, I think women are equal to men. I think they should be paid equally to men. I think they should be treated equally. And I wouldn't have given a guy at that age my seat, so I wasn't going to give the woman the seat. If she had asked specifically, I would have. But, you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't be want to be treated as equal one minute, and then you want me to do special things for you that I wouldn't do for a guy the next. It's like when I'm talking to somebody whose birthday it is. If it's a guy, he'll tell me his age right away. If it's a woman, "Oh, I can't tell you that I'm a woman." Stop. First of all, it's not the 50s. It's not Mad Men. You just tell us your age, and then we move on. We don't care, okay? But don't make me juggle 14 balls at once trying to figure out when I'm supposed to treat a woman as an equal and then when I'm supposed to treat her like I would treat a man. So when I see you and I ask you your age, and you're a woman, tell me. If I see you and you don't ask me for a seat, you're standing, I'm sitting, okay? You know what? If you're a woman and you see me on a train sitting down, don't even get on the train because I don't even want to deal with it anymore. So I just can't. There's just two sets of rules, and I don't know which rules to follow. It gets very exhausting. Just please, please don't expect different treatment if you're a woman. Unless you seem to have a lot of money, then I'll treat you really well so that I can get money from you. But I would do the same thing if it's a guy, because I'm shallow. So, that is my annoyance of the day. Enjoy the conversation. Thanks for checking out the podcast. And, yeah, there you go.
Test 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Test 1, 2, 1, 2.
Testing.
We are two men testing.
I just spent 2 hours in this studio. This is where I broadcasted from. These are all my notes.
All right. I'm going to use them. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about Trump a little bit. You know, kind of, it's just never ending. Like,
thank God for you. Thank God for him, for you guys.
It's like
right? Right? Whatever. Oh, whatever.
It's like,
who knows what's good, what's bad? I don't know anymore. I don't know. I literally don't know.
Well, that's.
I thought I knew things.
That's
now
part of the conversation we were having just last night at the Comedy Cellar. And are we ready? Are we going? All right, good. Let's not edit the beginning out. That's how we should start.
Okay, fair enough.
This is the Paul Mercurio Show. We are in New York City with a good pal of mine, a brilliant guy, a nice human being who has a lovely wife and family. And what's your name again? No. Dr. Drew Pinsky. What's up, buddy?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm good. So this was all like last minute. We got made it work.
That's good. You're using the very studio I was just broadcasting back to Los Angeles at. This is awesome. Maybe we can do this anytime you want. Let's hang out here longer.
Well, Eric, can we get a bed, a couple of beds, and some beers?
Well, the beers, sleep here. Right. Beers, maybe.
So you're in town for a week.
You're doing a little Teen Mom reunion tomorrow.
That thing's kind of blown up, huh?
This is now 10 years we've been doing it.
Is that long?
10 years. They were 16 and pregnant. That was the original show.
Wow.
And now they're 26-year-old adults. And it's interesting dealing with them all that time. I deal with them very differently. When they're kids, they're like, I was dealing with them like they were, I was very concerned about them and treating them really carefully. Now it's like, come on, guys.
Did some of them turn out exactly the way as adults you thought they would, and then did some not? In terms of their development?
It's funny you would say that. I would ask it because I wasn't thinking that way about them.
At the time?
Yeah. And I would say it's like anything else. It's really hard to predict where people are going to go. Yeah. It's like your own kids. Like, what are the directions they're going to take? Yeah. Though I would say Macy ended up exactly. I mean, she's been very consistently who she was.
Right.
The other ones, Amber ended up a lot better than I would have predicted. Because she was in prison for a long time. And she did 3 years of treatment in prison and benefited.
Is there a commonality among those people?
Those people.
That group of people. I didn't mean it that way. Like you have some kind of a disease.
You mean, in
terms of like, is it sort of a broken home situation? I mean, look,
these particular guys or the kids that get pregnant?
The kids that get pregnant.
All right. I look at teen pregnancy as a mental health symptom.
Huh.
It's an at-risk youth symptom. The healthy teenagers tend not to.
They figure it out. They either abstain or they use a condom or whatever.
And I would ask these girls, what? What were you intellectually know? What do you? When you really drill in, they're like, well, a baby would be nice. It'd be somebody I'd take care of, and I could love, and they would love me. And they're looking for an answer.
Is it because they come from a broken home, or
trauma, or some kind of trauma? Yeah, something's up.
Right, and then so they think that thing is going to fill it.
Yeah.
It's going to be their focus, and it'll block out all their other problems.
And you have to drill a bit to get them to cop to it, but they all do.
Well, typically, what's the first answer they give you? Is it sort of like, it just feels good better without a condom?
I don't know. I wasn't thinking.
Do you ever just want to slap someone just generally? Them in particular, but just people you deal with.
I'm not going to answer that question because Theo Von asked me do I ever want to choke one of them, and I answered, and that became a scandal.
Oh, yeah, no.
It actually became a scandal. I was speaking figuratively, everybody, which is really brings the Kathy Griffin topic up.
Yes.
We nothing is allowed to pass anymore without a gigantic reaction.
I know.
Now, this is sort of an extreme case of it, but you're not allowed to make mistakes. You're not allowed to speak figuratively.
Right.
Everything's literal.
Right. I had a situation at one of the clubs just up the street from here a few weeks ago. I went on stage, the main clubs in the city and, decent crowd. And I'm just chit-chatting with a couple in the back of the room. Oh, you're visiting. Yes, you're married. Yeah, but this, that. And the guy's answering the questions. I don't know why he is. And then I said, how long have you been married? And the woman blurts out, 25 years. And the way she said it was kind of funny. And we all laughed. And that was the one question she answered. And I kind of made a comment about it. And then another woman, like a 30-year-old woman with a guy, goes, what, a woman can't answer questions? Only a guy can?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? She goes, only men can speak in public? I will go, what? I go, you're kidding, right? She goes, well, she wasn't kidding. And I said, look, you're trying to create controversy when there is none. So this is going to work one of two ways. You can sit here and keep your mouth shut, or you can get the fuck up out of this show for the next 15 minutes.
Was this
minutes.
On stage?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is from stage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Because the minute she said it, too, the rest of the crowd went, oh, come on. Yeah, like, so she's trying to make something out of nothing. I said, or you can get out, go to the bar, then you can see the window through the showroom. When I'm done in 15 minutes, you can come back in. But if you think you're going to bring some bullshit agenda that you have that belongs in a march somewhere and not in my show, this is my show for the next 15 minutes. Or I said, go out and do stand up for 10 years and earn the right to be up here to say what you want, but you're not going to create something out of nothing. The place started applauding, everybody's, and she stayed. But the point is, that's exactly. It's gotten so bad. Not only if you slip up, you are forever nailed to a cross
for a mistake.
You have people who want to create a controversy when it does not exist. I mean,
yes,
I'm not talking about
that's Kathy just an Griffin. Aggressive. That's just I need to aggress. I need to be aggressive.
Do you
and
think
I'm using this as a mallet.
Yeah, right. And do you think it's because social media has emboldened everybody to have an opinion every time, all the time, at any time, day or night?
That's part of
and
it.
And it spills over into real life?
It's part of it, yes. And I believe the social media, the gratification of it is being part of a mob. People are very gratified when they're primitive, especially being part of a mob.
So she thought she was going to get the rest of the crowd on her side.
She's used to being in the mob. I don't mean the organized crime. I mean a mob of humans, which is something that has preoccupied and concerned, psychologists and philosophers and people for a long time because mobs are dangerous.
Yeah.
Living with that now.
Oh, God, yeah. How is social media over the years, because you were practicing and rehabilitating people, et cetera, when there was no social media and then there was.
Yeah.
How has that changed us as humans, if you can answer that? And that's, I know that's a big question, but more specifically in terms of the issues that you deal with and how you have to deal with issues, and are there issues related to social media that you deal with?
Other than when people are the object of bullying and have distress because of what they either see on social media or the object of on social media.
Right.
The fact that they're a little disconnected and preoccupied and are all checking it all the time and creating some anxiety, that's sort of a background stuff that we're all dealing with.
Right.
And by when I say when they read on social media, I mean news and things like that, which gets everybody all spun these days.
Right.
But where I'm really starting to see the trouble is in adolescents and young adults. Where it's real, we don't even know the
what
full effect
yet. What is the trouble you're seeing?
I was talking to a therapist today. She called it quasi-relating. The fact that they're so busy quasi-relating, they're not actually, it's an easy to say they're not having real relationships, but they really aren't having, really are not having relationships, particularly romantic relationships. They're too busy with porn and sexting and having quasi-interaction through social media and sexting.
So you'd say compared to a teenager 20 years ago, they're more socially dysfunctional on some level?
Well, some data just came out on that. Not socially dysfunctional so much as socially disconnected and not practiced at social interaction. So they're hitting young. What we used to see on Loveline all the time was the following call. I'm 24 years old. I found the one. I found her. And she didn't really want to keep dating or something. And so I became her friend. And now it's been 2 years. And now it's time. It's like, time for what? Well, I put my time in. And now it's time for her to step up. They're stalking. They engage in stalking behaviors because they don't understand what a relationship is or how to negotiate it or navigate it.
Wow.
And so they're 20, early mid-20s, and they just haven't had the practice or the ability, any kind of familiarity with it.
And they have no ability to get signals and to read signals.
They're just off
of
on it. And of course, I'm dealing with, outlying cases, but it's symptomatic of what's going on.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff going on that has yet to be. We were very preoccupied for adolescent and young adults in the whole hookup culture. Remember that whole phenomenology or the word of hookup culture?
You mean,
one-night
buddy?
Stands. One-night stands. Yeah. But it was called the hookup culture.
Right.
Well, that's over. that's done. And the people thought there was a lot of hooking up going on. They've measured it. Now it's done.
But why? I would think with social media and
Twitter.
Because
they can't have relations. They can't have any kind of, they can't do it. Some are obviously still doing it. But for the most part, we're going to have to figure out what this is.
So the anxiety level is going to be higher when a person walks into a party. And has to.
Well, they go right to their phone.
Right.
It's not necessarily higher because they're just diving into the phone.
Right. Right. But that's their way of dealing with it. Yeah. And
it's crazy, right?
And it's.
And then they don't do the interaction because they're on the phone.
Right.
And so there's no practice.
And I wonder if you trace sort of. I mean, there's lots of reasons that marriages don't work, but I'm sure that will be
a contributing
factor.
It'll do something.
Yeah.
I don't know what. Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, people worried about television when we were kids.
Right, exactly.
The effect of television on these kids.
Yeah.
They're spending 3 hours a day, our average kid, on the television.
We watch cable news and tell ourselves we're educating ourselves, but it's the same story over and over again.
No, it's not even. Yeah, it's just an echo chamber. That's why Kathy, I think, convinced herself this would be something applauded. The beheading of Trump.
Yeah, well, I think that it's so divided and there's such hostility.
Yeah, but then the both sides turned on poor Kathy.
Yeah, and
I've told her. I said, look, I don't like what she did. I think she should
have. You spoke to her.
I've been saying publicly, and I had a brief interaction with her. But I'm saying, I don't like it. Don't dig it. I hope you apologize. I hope you get out of this. You should be good apology the other day. Well done. Maybe apologize to the Trumps too. But I'm going to stand with you because I hate the mob more.
Right.
I hate what the mob's doing to you.
Right. And you mean both sides of the aisle. You're not just saying
I'm just saying the mob.
Right.
I don't care where they're coming from. This mob behavior must be stood up against.
Right.
It is dangerous. It's pathological. Who was I just thinking? Oh. Well, I was just thinking about Alexis de Tocqueville, a Frenchman who was afraid of the mob because he came out of the French Revolution.
Right.
And he was worried about how we conduct our free speech here, that we don't allow. He says, although we have the biggest claim to free speech, we don't actually allow it.
Right.
Because the mob. Right. The mob will yell it down at the town square.
Fareed Zakaria had a really great commentary this past weekend, and he said that, this idea of these liberal campuses shutting down and boycotting right wing, whether it's what's her name, Ann Coulter or whoever,
is the
antithesis of what this country is about.
Yeah.
And it sort of, but I think everybody on that side of the aisle feels emboldened because it's like, well, Trump's got his mob, we're going to have our mob, and it's going to be mob versus mob.
I've got, it's so sick.
I know, but don't you read it that way on some level?
Well, I've got a bunch of thoughts about it. I think that one part of the problem is college administrators were people that cut their teeth in the 60s and 70s when you don't trust authority, man, and you're not the boss of me, man. And, remember the credo of that time was freedom. Remember that Peter Fonda speech at the end of Loaded? Hey, man, we just want to be free.
Yeah.
We want to do what we want to do. We want to get high. But freedom was the rallying cry, and we certainly weren't comfortable with authority. Well, now those people are in authority.
Right.
And so when at UC Davis they take over the library, the authorities go, well, what are we going to do? Right. They took over. What are you going to do?
That's the way it's done on campus.
They don't exert their. They're not comfortable being adult.
Right.
So there's no adults in the campus anymore. Number one. Number two, the issue a college professor told me the other day said that it has gone from the cry of freedom to the cry for tolerance, and you have to not just tolerance, but you have to. If you disagree with me, you're offending me.
Yes.
And not only do you have to not agree with me, you have to endorse me.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fully support me, or I'm offended.
Yes. Oh, fully is a really key word because I go on these panels on, the news talk shows. And if I say one thing that is, let's say sort of I'm surrounded by a fair number of progressives or conservatives, pick it. If I say,
you're like me, you hate them all. I hate everybody. I hate everybody.
I'm an issue by issue guy for me.
I'm just a topic by topic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like reason it out.
But if you, I can see it in their eyes. If you say something that feels slightly conservative, then the progressives, they have to attack. They either attack or they start, you can see physically and emotionally they repel, and the same with the other side. Yeah. So it's straight down the ticket, 100% you're on board with all of these issues and the way we approach
things. It's ridiculous.
Otherwise, you're the other side.
Well, and the other side is offensive.
Yes.
Offensive.
Right.
So you shut people down by being offended.
Right.
So it's gone from freedom to tolerance. It's gone from you can't disagree with me to you have to endorse me, to fully support me.
Fully, yeah.
And it's just gotten bizarre. It's gotten truly wild.
And so when I, you see something like, I was on a panel on, it was on Fox News, and there's myself, a couple of conservatives, a progressive, and we were talking about the Constitution. Obama had said that the Constitution is a flawed document, and they started, beating up Obama and, he's a terrible president. And he shouldn't be putting, your president shouldn't talk about the Constitution, a sacred document. And I was like, look, it was written. The founding fathers said they wrote it to be, amended. It was amended 27 times. It's a living, breathing document. They couldn't anticipate every.
And by the way, they couldn't even agree on how much Jefferson thought it should be redone every few years.
Right, exactly. And so, and then there was an African-American guy on the panel and he goes, as written, it's a perfect document. And I looked at him. And he was so locked into the politics of going after Obama and being a conservative that I said, you of all people can't say that. You, based on the as written, you're a torso. You're three-fifths a person.
Right.
You were three-fifths a person.
Right.
How can you say that? And he literally couldn't see the color of his own skin. And
he didn't understand that piece of the document?
He forgot. He kind of just didn't really respond. And he goes, he tried to pivot.
He goes, I'm a free man.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a full vote.
Right. And so there are these moments, and I've been in some of them where I just shake my head and my shoulders slouch, mm-hmm. and I'm like,
I hate
it. Is this kind of where we are? Like, we're so
It's primitive. Very primitive, and that's very concerning. I kind of saw this coming. I just didn't believe it was going to get here.
What made you see it? When did you start to see signs of it?
The narcissistic term. When I was writing about narcissism, I started looking at periods of history where societies were coming out of high degrees of interpersonal trauma, and there was a big narcissistic turn. And the only examples I could really come up with, of course, I was trying to come up with extreme examples, was pre-revolutionary France, and that went where it went.
Right.
And Aztec societies. They would traumatize the shit out of their kids. And they would create these tremendous warriors. And the only way they glued the society...
Wait, what would they do to the kids to traumatize?
Oh, they'd hold them over fires. And they had this thing called the Codex on how to raise kids, which is how to create a warrior, which is you just beat the shit out of these
kids.
Make them strong. And you hold them over fire and horrible, horrible things. And the only way that society stayed glued together was having a common sacrifice every day, that so they could direct their aggression at one.
Right.
And have it out every day. That was the big sacrifices and stuff. In France, it was the guillotine.
Right.
And now it's social media and media and people losing their jobs. That's the current. Brian Williams loses a job.
Yeah.
And when the mob goes, the bloodlust is for job. But what concerns me about Kathy, she lost her jobs and they're still going.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that.
Well, I thought that, it wasn't a smart thing to do.
No, it was a mistake. You think she's happy about it?
No, I know. But there's the other. There's the argument that we were talking about this the other night at the Comedy Cellar. You don't apologize. You say, "Look, I understand that I would personally apologize, but you can make the argument. You don't apologize for the following reason: I understand this is going to offend somebody. This is how I feel. It's free speech, and if you're talking about offending, let me read to you some of the things that Donald Trump has said and or done in the last 2 years in his quest for the White House. And so I think on some level, subconsciously, it's learned behavior. I'm not blaming Trump directly for her actions, but we have a much more lethal,
devolved discourse. Yeah. I totally agree with you. It's on both sides, but it's
international. I mean, look what he did to the president of Montenegro when he pushed him out of the way. And by the way, when I saw that, I don't know about anybody out there listening, it was so crazy outrageous to me when I first, and I saw him do it live when it actually happened.
Oh,
really? I happened to have the TV on. I thought it was like a low-level aide. My subconscious was telling me, there's no way that he would push a world leader out of the way.
Subconscious was that this had been going on, like they've been shoving each other before.
Well, you don't want to shove Merkel. She'll kick your ass.
You know
what
I mean? Like there was some shoving going on and we just caught a piece of it. I was like, wow.
I thought the guy who we shoved aside, turned out to be in Montenegro, white-haired guy, was like the custodian for the building that they were showing him around. They were showing him around this building.
But
that's everything that we have in this guy. That's not going to change. That's who he is. And I read an article a couple of days afterwards that said that informed this behavior, because years and years ago there was a bridge. One of the big bridges was christened or redone, and The real hero of the project apparently was the architect. Mm. But in all the speeches that were made, the architect never got mentioned. And Trump was there. Mm. And Trump remembered that. And Trump remembered, like he was at a young age, saying to himself, why the fuck would somebody let themselves not be acknowledged? I'm never going to let that happen. And his whole form of behavior is simply the way he does real estate deals. Hey, come on, let it go away.
I cannot
agree. Just give me the permit. Come on.
I can't agree with you more. I keep telling people when their hair catches on fire and they keep spinning on the things, this is not only the way he does business, and I'm not being critical when I say this, it's just a matter of fact. Yeah. By the same token, it's how he achieves negotiating positions, by taking saying outrageous things and then coming back to where he wants to be.
Right.
And while you're like, to me, the perfect example of it was the president of Mexico, former president of Mexico, Fox, when he went berserk after something. And I said, that's what he's trying to do to people.
Right.
He's trying to make you, and then go, see, he can't be relied upon. He's crazy.
Yeah. What's up? And it just this
and guess what? It's worked pretty well for him.
Yes.
And so I'm not taking issue with him. No. it's crazy to watch. And it's to watch the media react to it is even crazier.
Right.
So but here we are.
But that conversation with Comey, hey, let this thing go. He's a good guy. Like, you just replace a couple of the words. I could hear him saying to someone who controls permits for the city of New York going to his buddy, hey, my buddy Jones, come on, he's a good guy. Well, give him a couple of permits. Come on.
And not only
look
that,
the other way.
There's another piece to this too, which is a certain style of management, which I used to be very affected by these guys because my dad's got some of this flavor, and so I would get in with these and they'd know how to work me, and I would know how to respond to them in ways that was
what
gratifying.
Did your dad do again?
He was a physician, but he had this narcissistic style about him. And I had a guy, they'll all do the same thing. They'll go, you're my man. You are they anoint you and then they build you up.
Right.
And the whole thing is to make me, the boss, feel good and don't disappoint me because you're my man.
Oh.
And it's a narcissistic extension of themselves.
Sort of a manipulation.
It's a manipulation, but it's not a conscious
manipulation. So in other words, you say that to me and then I don't want to let you down.
Yes, that's right. They will select people like me that want to please and satisfy the narcissistic style. That's the way I used to be when I was before therapy. and they can get you. The guy I'm speaking of and I'm just discussing here had me working for free. And I was working my ass off for free.
Wow. As a doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, because you didn't want to let him down.
Yeah. And then I got so deep in, I got so angry, I hired an attorney to go in and go, do you see? He wouldn't listen to me. And I hired an attorney, and he was shattered by that. Shattered that I would want to rupture this magical
and then
relationship.
You broke it, and
then,
you don't appreciate him.
Then when I came in and showed him what was going on, he goes, he announces through him, he goes, only Dr. Drew Pinsky would be so forthright and honest as to bring this to me. And it got flipped all around. And okay, well, whatever it takes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's
that's why he doesn't fire some of his anointed ones until late, till he's angry. And
why is that?
Because they're him. They're his.
Right.
He picked them.
Right.
He picked them. And he's good at picking them. He's good at, that's the other thing, he's good at
this. But if he fires them, it'll be an acknowledgement in some way that he made a mistake and that'll look poorly on him.
Yeah, it takes him longer to fire because they're his. He picked them, you know. And he seems like he's pretty good at picking people. That's been his style his whole life, you know. But so
I have this constant debate about, you know, I'll have friends say, oh, Trump's an idiot. He's an idiot. I go, he's not an idiot.
No, he's not the devil. He's not Hitler. He's not an idiot.
No, he's arrogant. He's arrogant combined with having done business a certain way in the rough and tumble world of New York real estate. I mean, I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, a lot of Italians, right? And that's kind of the way they did things. It's like, hey, here's $1,000. Give Joe Capaldi the tarring business for the main streets in Providence, right? It's like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You take care of people, right? And that's how stuff gets done. I mean, if you did a statistical analysis of all the buildings and real estate that were put up in the city over the last 50 years, I dare to say 90% of them, there was some little bit of graft or this or that or sort of, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod that happened. So he just said, hey, I got elected on the idea that I'm going to break Washington, so I'm just going to take the model that I've been working under for the last 40 years and drop it into D.C., and whether it works or not works, I don't give a shit. This is how I do things. So he gets with Comey, and the thing that throws me, though, is I think and they say he's great at reading people, how he could so misread Comey to think that Comey would go for this does put a question in my mind about Trump's judgment of other people.
I think he is good enough at it that he has categorical
confidence
in his instincts.
So he's like,
I'll
get the guy. I'll be the only guy that sways him.
It'll play. No, I still think somehow he's thinking, well, this thing's playing out. We're gonna go to the mat on this one. Right. And I'll get him.
Right.
So somehow he has the chess game thought out 20 moves down the line.
Do you buy it's tied to his father and his father was tough on him and it was never good enough and sort of that this is the base of this is proving himself?
That and I was thinking the other day if he has a bit of a hero thing going on because heroes always have the one part, they always feel bad that there's the one person they couldn't save.
He always has one picture behind him in the White House. It's his dad.
Well, the one person he couldn't save was his brother.
Right.
He totally idolized.
Yeah, alcoholic.
And I'm wondering if some of this is about that, too.
You know, so in other words, I'll be a success.
I'm going to be heroic on his behalf. You know,
but how does that?
I don't know. I don't have that. but yeah, and the dad sets up the narcissism, right? You know, dad beat. It's pretty rough on him.
Right. It's not. So it's like I'm going to show you, Dad. I'm going to show you.
Either that, or I'm. There's another version of that, which is I'm injured, and therefore to fill that injury, I need to get from the world what I need, and I get good at getting from the world what I need.
Right. And do you think? See, I was a bit surprised that the people on the left went after Kathy as hard as they did over that.
I think everyone was, but I think it's the bottom. I think it's the bottom on the Trump bashing. It's on the cartoon bashing.
Right.
Now it maybe people will get down to the sort of the way we've always done things.
Like, yeah, one of the other things I didn't like about it is it sort of gives them more fodder against the progressives, right? So that'll get brought up again and again and again.
Oh, I agree.
You know,
she did certain people a favor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Trump probably. Ms. Trump a favor.
Oh, yeah. Right. I was kind of, I'm not saying it was wrong to apologize, but I was, Kathy's been out there a lot and she's ballsy. I was surprised she apologized. I don't know, maybe she was surprised by the backlash?
Yeah, I don't think she's ever been in I've been in those shitstorms. I've had stuff come at me.
And they pile on.
It's stunning. You can't believe it.
And
like I it's easy to apologize. You just go, I didn't intend this.
Yeah.
I was making fun, whatever. I'm sorry you had that reaction.
Right.
It's usually a misconstrual. It's rarely, you know, I intended to, you know,
I think too, what ends up happening is if you're hanging out with like-minded people a lot.
That's exactly right.
It gets back to the mob thing. It's sort of like this fucking, can you believe this? Can you believe it? And if you haven't talked to anybody outside that circle for a week or two, you start to go, yeah, stringing them up on Fifth Avenue was a good idea because you become so emboldened in terms of your negativity toward this person that anything seems reasonable.
You also think the whole world feels that way.
Right,
and
exactly.
Then when it pushes back, you're like, whoa.
Every day I make myself watch Fox News because it's interesting. They'll manipulate and sometimes if it's really bad. You know how bad it is, by the way, for Trump, when you go to Fox, just see what they're not covering, and then you know that's like on a scale of 1 to 10, it's really bad. It's really simple. Like, if they're going to give it like a couple of minutes, then it's a 9. If they're giving it
converse applies that if there's something really good going on, CNN won't cover it.
Exactly. It's just this whole thing.
Funny.
And so, you know, for somebody like Kathy, but I agree with you. I thought the apology, I saw it, it was heartfelt. Let's move on. But there's no forgiveness, why is that?
There is, because people, we do still like resurrection, because it relieves the mob of its guilt of having harmed somebody.
Wow, you know, you're good. You should go into this full time.
So we do like resurrection. We want somebody to resurrect. We will give them that potential, but only after we've extracted some real blood.
Yeah. And she's lost her job at CNN.
Squatty potty.
Yeah.
But now she hired Lisa Bloom today. You see what happened today?
No.
She's gone on the offensive today with Lisa Bloom saying that she's being bullied by the Trump family.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's the case. I mean, look, and having a little kid in the middle of this, that's the other thing where you got to go, boy, this guy's got an 11, 12-year-old kid. It'd be horrible if he saw this. Don't do this, mm-hmm. right? You got to keep that in mind too. Yeah. But
that's the point. It humanized. The fact that people had to think about him as a human being softened a lot of stuff, and hopefully we'll take the discourse back to politics and policy. Right. Like, let's do that.
Yeah.
Can't we do that?
But it's,
please.
but I think that they had enough time.
They?
The Republicans, and particularly the Trump campaign, to lay the groundwork for a lot of problems, because I really think that he came in on such a high that they just started to do business as usual in the Trump way.
Listen,
and who knows what that's fraught. So far, we already know that there's all this Russia.
The people that sent him in wanted him to rip and shred.
And I had this argument the other night.
And that's what he did.
Yeah, and I was telling somebody, he could get reelected right now.
Absolutely.
Because
I don't think people understand. They don't understand the rest of the country.
No, they don't. They interviewed a couple of people after one of the many big controversies with him. And the guy goes, look, as long as I get my job and he does the other things for the economy that he promised, I think he's doing a great job. It goes back to, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose a
vote. A lot of people feel that way. And, a lot. And you in the middle of the country, a lot of people that way.
Right.
And the people on the coast, you can't say anything positive about him. I called Van Jones after he got in a shitstorm. He said, Trump's last, I think, State of the Union address, he said, at least he sounds prudential. I agree with this. He got vilified because he agreed. Right. And I said, Van, this is it. This is the mob, man. You're in the middle of it. He was shattered by it. He felt terrible. He managed it well and got through it. But, you know, it's awful.
Yeah, it was always hard to say something positive about the other side, but now it's impossible because this person has created such a polarized environment that
I wouldn't lay that on him. I think that was believe
me. You think it was there?
Oh my God! Yeah.
Not so much as it wasn't as bad with Bush or Obama. I mean,
George W. Bush.
Maybe, but I don't know. I don't feel it was quite as. He was hated and viewed as dumb.
The social media thing hadn't happened yet. Right. I bet you if we had it, we could have spun it into this.
I just think I think Trump is at a whole other level of vitriol that sort of. I know what you're saying. I do put him in the same ballpark.
I think he is a symptom, not a cause. I really do.
I don't know. I think for me, it's a little bit more of cause. Okay. Yeah,
we can't prove it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Either way.
No, but I think that when the problem comes in too, sort of when you have people on either side who just don't want to hear the other side.
That's awful. I want my mind changed.
Yes.
That's how I grow. That's how I learn. Please change my mind.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So I hate everybody right now. I hate both sides. I really do. I'm really just like right in the middle.
And there's a veracity issue with Trump and everybody and that sort of like...
As it pertains to what? Tweets?
Well, just...
His initial tweet, whatever it is, he's not concerned with the truth.
No,
he's concerned with taking a position that freaks you out.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can get back to where he wants to go.
Right. And the Democrats...
Don't look for the truth.
Right. And the Democrats can blame themselves too for this, for creating an environment where all of these people were so disenfranchised that they voted for this guy.
That's right.
You know, and that's why I don't like Hillary.
I'm telling you, millennials, they're freaked the hell out that they are not going to be able to work.
Yeah.
I mean, I am around kids from the highest institutions, the highest levels of training. I mean, my kids went to great schools, got great training, and all them and their friends is just this gigantic pool of built-up talent that is sitting on the sideline.
And they're worried. Nothing. They got nothing.
They don't see anything ahead.
Can't be a lawyer. There's too many lawyers.
Well, one son's going to go to law school, but not going to practice law. He's going to try to do contract. He wants to do other things with it. But
yeah,
they're looking down the road just going, there's zero. They see shrink. That's all this. Stagnation is what they really see.
And is that?
And everything that's in place is already in place, and there's nothing for them.
And are they the Bernie Sanders supporters of the world? Do you think that sort of they feel like? Because Bernie, I think, makes a promise that he can't keep. You know, everything's going to
Bernie. Remember, the Bernie guys flipped. A lot of the millennials just wanted Bernie flipped over to Trump.
Yeah.
So they weren't. I don't know what they're thinking.
So
just want logjam to move. They want things to get better. That's all they want.
So they don't know how. And do they blame Washington in general or anybody in particular?
It really is back to old Bill Clinton's old aphorism. It's the economy, stupid.
Yeah.
And they really feel it more than anybody. You know what's weird to me is that Bill Clinton's looking to me like the best president of the last. Isn't that interesting? He's looking like the best president of the last like 40 years. I really miss Bill Clinton.
All we were upset about was a blowjob in the Oval Office.
Isn't that fascinating?
And Hillary and her cadre of spokespeople and surrogates just will not take real ownership for this loss.
I was the object of a mob that they created. And let me tell you something, brutal.
What happened?
You remember during the election, I have time to get into this, but where are we?
No, you got a couple of minutes. We got right. 5 minutes.
I was on CNN and everyone keep asking me about Trump's mental health. So I did like 10 minutes with Don Lemon on hypomania and impulsivity and blah, 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 blah. And the next day, my radio general manager or program director goes, "Hey, that was pretty good. Could you do 30 seconds on it for our website?" And I said, "All right." I sat down, did it in 30 seconds. And he goes, "You probably do something on Hillary too." And I go, "All right." And I did 30 seconds on the care she was getting from her doctors, which I was very, very concerned. I'm still concerned about it. Mm. But she had some really serious – I don't know if you're aware. She had a stroke and a transverse sinus thrombosis and had multiple blood clots, and she has hypercoagulability. And she put her on – they put her on – armor thyroid for no reason, and armor thyroid is associated with hypercoagulability, so they're causing the and they were treating her with an old-fashioned anticoagulant. I was like really concerned that this is like celebrity healthcare. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Celebrities get the worst healthcare.
Right.
And so I did 30 seconds on that. Drudge picked it up. It became a scandal. I mean, a scandal. This doctor says Hillary is not fit for the office. That
now
was the
I
distortion.
Remember. Okay, yeah.
It was not at all what I said.
Right.
And so, and her people came after me.
Really?
I mean,
what were they
after.
Saying to you?
I can't even tell you the. Right. I can't. I'll okay. tell you later yeah. the levels it got to.
And this was through social media and then back channels as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Threats.
Oh yeah. And so when Kathy says it feels, you know, like I like, well, that's what these people.
But the
did.
Problem is an apology isn't enough, so she had to hire.
Well, so I of course went out and it's not. Listen, I'm concerned. And it was all like, how dare you have an examiner? You're unethical. You're going to get the professional societies involved.
Yeah, you're on a TV set. She's not with you. You've never.
No,
seen
no. Her doctor had actually put out a statement. I was going from her doctor's record, from the statement her physician put out. Paragraph by paragraph, I was taking issue with what was on the record about her health, about her health care, not her health, her health care. Anyway, so
people don't care about
you. Get through
people
it.
Don't,
that's
people,
the other thing; it goes away.
But we live in a society
it goes away
where
so fast. It's
the
crazy.
Most important. The problem is that the core of it for me is the most important thing in our society is to win at all costs. Meaning,
politically, I think that's our thing.
Yeah, I mean, like the
I'm
example.
I'm not sure that's
like,
true everywhere. I think it's politically that's our thing.
Well,
that's
right now,
sick.
Well, yeah, in the context of
because
this conversation.
What's good for us as a people, a citizenship, or a country is not the priority, which is sick.
Right, exactly. But the point is to win at all costs, not to sort of admit that the other side might have a valid point on any issue.
Yeah.
Like the example I gave of the African-American gentleman who said that was defending the Constitution as written. He's so hell-bent on making sure that his side wins that he's not looking at A, reality, or B, what's really better for the larger cause.
Well, I also think that we've become so steeped in ideology, and that's where some of this winning stuff comes from, is that the pragmatic reality of making a country better or helping a people doesn't matter.
But there's a core.
And that's very troubling
right.
to me.
And there's a level of selfishness on both sides in human nature being,
it's power.
I just need to get what
it's
I want.
Power.
And if I have to give up 1% of what I want so you get what you want, then I've lost. It's all or
you.
Nothing.
I don't know about you, but I have none of that in me.
No, I don't.
I got zero of that.
No.
I just don't understand.
I think you've got to compromise. It's life. It's human nature.
It's helping people.
Yeah.
That's the goal here. Make better lives for humans.
Yeah.
Isn't that what we're all about here?
Yeah, so. I hope. Well, all right. Listen, we're going to do this again.
All right. And again and again.
And again and again. You've been on a few times, more than anybody, I think.
Four.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to hang out while you're here.
Yeah.
This is Dr. Drew Pinsky. They can hear you.
Go to drdrew.com. I've got my whole family of podcasts
he's
there.
He's got 48 podcasts.
He's got different podcasts. They're all different sort of theme. I've got one medical one called Weekly Infusion. I've got a drug and alcohol kind of-ish one called This Life. It's sort of more about this life than drug and alcohol. I've got my own, which I just do whatever is my whim.
Yeah.
And then me and Adam every day.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. That's great. Always great talking to you.
You too.
Could talk to you forever. Dr. Drew, everybody.
All right, buddy.
Hope you enjoyed the conversation like I did. And we got a couple of cool guests coming up. Some big names in the next couple of weeks. Keep tuning in. Thanks for checking it out. And we'll see you next week.
A Westwood One podcast production.